From the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. On the program today, it's Jesse Baker. Jesse is a young up-and-coming rock musician from Lancaster who's taking a different approach to the music business than the typical 20-year-old with a guitar. Jesse blogs about his music business experiences every day. He's proactively making connections and building community in the local scene, and he's super focused on creating movement with his art. The results? Well, he and his band have already headlined the Chameleon Club, played the main stage at the Launch Music Conference earlier this year, and will be joining Kingsfoil later this month for their CD release party on September 29th, one of the most talked about rock shows in central Pennsylvania this year. Jesse joined me for a very rich conversation about the business of music and some of the more controversial discussions that have spawned from his daily writing.
You have work that you want people to hear, you know.
Yeah.
And you might not even have, you might have to just do your work for free and just get it out there, because maybe you can't even fathom like how exactly you'll make money off of it.
I got it.
But you know that if you charge for it right off the bat, no one will hear it. So, you know, maybe that I'm early in the process and I'm just like, people have to hear these songs. You know what I mean? Like,
coming up, it's Jesse Baker. But first, let's find out what's happening around the wood stove. Our very first creativity conference is coming to Lancaster, Pennsylvania on Saturday, October 20th at the Candy Factory. Creativity Con 2012 is a one-day conference featuring 5 guest speakers who will share their stories and offer tools and resources to inspire you to ignite your creative fire. Whether you're a creative professional, student, hobbyist, or somewhere in between, there will be something to get you inspired to live your life filled with creative passion. This conference is not specific to a particular discipline, and all of the presentations can be applied across the creative spectrum. Registration is open now, and it's only $99 if you sign up to attend the conference before September 30th. All of the details, including the conference schedule, bios of our speakers, and a link to register for the conference can be found at creativitycon.com. Or visit woodstovehouse.com and click the banner at the top of the page. Creativity Con 2012, October 20th at the Candy Factory. Coming up on Saturday, September 29th, Kingsfoil will be celebrating the release of their brand new album, A Beating Heart is a Bleeding Heart, at the Chameleon Club in Lancaster. Also on the bill that night are previous Around the Wood Stove guest Derry Miller with his band Derry Miller and the Vale, and today's guest Jesse Baker. Doors are at 7 p.m. on Saturday, September 29th. Visit chameleonclub.net for details and tickets. And catch Kingsfoil right here on Around the Wood Stove next week, talking about the brand new album. Lancaster's 24-hour plays are back. On the weekend of November 2nd and 3rd, Woodstove House will be producing the second annual Lancaster's 24-hour plays, and we're looking for writers, directors, and actors who are interested in participating in this year's Extreme Theater Weekend. If you'd like to be part of this year's show, visit lancaster24.com for details. The public performance will be held on Saturday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. at Community Mennonite Church of Lancaster. That's at 328 West Orange Street, downtown. I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. That's a song called Let Me Go from today's guest, Jesse Baker. Jesse is a young rock musician from Lancaster who's on the rise. In the past year, Jesse and his band have become a moving force in the regional music scene. They recently joined Ducky and the Vintage and Derry Miller and the Vale at the Big To Do Festival in Harrisburg. And this past summer, Jesse and his band headlined a show at Lancaster's Chameleon Club. Jesse joined me for a conversation about his approach to navigating the vast waters of the modern music business. It's Jesse Baker on Around the Wood Stove. Joining me at the Candy Factory in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania, it's Jesse Baker. Welcome to Around the Wood Stove.
Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure to have you on because you've been like on the radar. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know when I first heard of you. It had to be before launch because I knew when you were playing launch, like I knew that. I was either following you on something or, but I knew that who you were before that. And you played the big stage at launch. And then, yeah, I've just been sort of following what you're doing ever since. And I'm fascinated a little bit by one component of your story that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. And that is sort of some of the things you're doing to get on those radars. Because you're playing some really good shows and doing it yet without, you know, the big record. I mean, a lot of bands who are playing the kinds of shows you're playing have already put out two or three albums. And... Mm-hmm. And you're getting there without that, but you're doing some other things that I think are really interesting. But first, let's establish some context. Tell me the backstory of your band, of Jesse Baker Music.
Yeah, sure. I grew up in Myerstown, which is outside of Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And I tell people I'm from Lancaster because pretty much everything I do is in Lancaster.
Right on.
So, the band's a three-piece. The two other guys, Drew Kramer, plays drums. Sean Otto plays bass. We actually met and played on worship teams together at a church in Lancaster.
Or
in the Lancaster
right?
area, yeah. So LCBC Church. That's how we met, and that's kind of like towards the end of high school, my life started kind of shifting into like Lancaster things, you know, once I could drive and stuff like that. So
right.
So, yeah, just coming to the Chameleon Club and things like that. So last June... Our first show we played was end of last June, so that'd be June 2011. We did like a battle of bands, and
that's all right.
Yeah, and completely different music and everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That was just we were just playing outside of church on some original music and stuff like that. And I think we were all at the point. Well, our bass player Sean, he's in high school. This is like his first band experience. You know, he's a senior this year. But Drew. Is actually there's like a 4-year difference in the band. Drew's actually 2 years older than me.
Okay.
He had been in bands before and that. So kind of when we came together last summer, that was like we kind of him and I at least had like a vision of it's kind of like our do-over, you know, as far
yeah,
as like
yeah.
band. It was like, all right, we're gonna do this right this time, you know.
I think what's so interesting about the music of yours that I've heard and the little bit of what I've seen you live is that for a young guy and young guys, you've got like a real throwback sound for me to or late 70s, early 80s kind of rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's just rock.
Yeah.
You know, there's no prefix.
Yeah, yeah.
Where does that come from?
Maybe just our taste in music.
Yeah.
Like, I try to just get involved with like really timeless
mm-hmm.
music. Actually, and the thing is, I like everything, you know, so there's stuff I like that is like, you know, like sometimes a band will like write songs not trying to be timeless. They're doing their thing.
Yeah, right.
And then they know it's going to fit in a certain pocket and that they're being themselves, you know, in that pocket. I do appreciate that kind of music, but I think the bands I most follow is just bands that reach back, you know, into older things, like things that have lasted forever, you know, and then just try to build on those. You know, build on those concepts.
So are you listening to old records or are you listening to new bands that are influenced?
Probably more than new bands.
Yeah,
like I try to know the like rock and roll history.
Yeah,
know?
Sure.
But I would say what I like daily listen to is kind of the current bands that are reaching back, you know.
What's so fascinating about the time we live in today to me is that genre has sort of been blown apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a time when the media and radio in particular really dictated what was popular, I mean what people heard literally.
Yeah.
And that's just that's gone. And that's, you know, we were only exposed to so much music in the 80s, early 80s, late 70s. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't get to other music unless you lived in a super, super big city and mm-hmm. had one of these independent record stores. But today, and this goes back maybe 10 years, that's gone. Like, you can get, and bands are popular in pretty much any genre.
Yeah, it's more like whatever's honest music.
Exactly.
You know?
Whatever feels most genuine to you. But I just think it's fascinating that, you know, when I was a kid playing in bands, you know, the thought of having a trombone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, that was so completely unheard of.
Yeah.
The big debate was whether or not you had a keyboard.
Yeah.
Because it made you less rock.
Yeah.
You know, if you had keyboard. Like when Van Halen put out 1984, it was like an abomination.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was like this suddenly the synth music. But now these bands come out and they have, you know, banjos in rock bands and mm-hmm. trumpets and, you know, it's just...
You expect it. You really...
You do. You kind of expect it.
You're like waiting for the instrument that... Not that it hasn't been used, but you're waiting for the instrument that almost stands out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Here's some straight-ahead rock and roll from my guest, Jesse Baker. This is Tearing Down the Walls on Around the Wood Stove. It's Jesse Baker on Around the Wood Stove with Tearing Down the Walls. Let's talk a little bit about this, your online presence, because that's one of the things that really drew me to wanting to have this conversation. You're doing some interesting stuff with your music, particularly around the blog, all right? Because you're like power blogging now, doing this.
The point of no return now.
the thing about it is, you know, if you have a small business of any kind, you're reading all this stuff about how you need to build an online presence through content.
Yeah.
And that content is king and all this kind of stuff. Yet you don't see a lot of bands doing that. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of bands. You see a lot of bands using Twitter and Facebook to just sort of blather their personal, you know, interests and taking funny pictures on Instagram.
Yeah.
But you don't see a lot of bands taking an approach that's very similar to a real small business. I don't mean to say real as though bands aren't real small businesses,
yeah.
but a lot of musicians don't treat their bands
yeah.
as real small businesses. You seem to be.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you got into doing this daily blog.
Yeah, well, I do. I've always liked business. And I've always, all through high school even, there's the ideas that bounce around in my head. I think that's why I like modern music so much, is that it's really becoming the artist's responsibility to run the business around their music. You know, the tools are all there are for us to do that. So I follow, like, Seth Godin is a guy who I follow. His blog, he blogs daily. He's definitely the biggest influence for the daily blog, you know. But yeah, just like there was really, it's just like an outlet for me to talk about those ideas and things, you know, those thoughts. It's just a way to put out that content, you know, and what I'm thinking about. I write it as if I know what I'm talking about, you know.
Yeah.
But there will definitely, blogging every day, you know, about my ideas, it really just makes me think, you know, makes me go back and read what I wrote, you know, and correct it, you know, if I find that's not. But yeah, that was a really, I just want to start that conversation, you know. And it seems like there are people out there like myself who enjoy blogs, you know, who are interested in that conversation, you know, and actually contribute to the conversation, not just that they're like interested in what I say, but they actually comment and they're like,
yeah,
well, this is what I found, you know.
What have you seen as a result of blogging about the music business every day?
Well, honestly, confusion is the one thing, because I think it's hard for me, and for, I think the blogging thing is a little difficult to completely understand where somebody's coming from, especially when your blogs are like three short paragraphs or whatever, you know.
Right.
So, but I mean, that's just something I think everybody just accepts. It just gets, you know, you put a thought out there that somebody else has been thinking about, you put that on your blog, somebody reads it, and the wheels start turning. They start saying the thought they've been thinking. Just gets a conversation going. And I think there's been as many people who have like kind of have thoughts along the line of like, I agree with this post, as there have been people who are like, well, actually, this is what I think, you know. And it's never really like an argument. It's just you start to get thoughts. You just start to get everybody's thoughts. Like, I think it shows that people do think about this stuff. Like, musicians even do think about business stuff, whether they would realize it or not, whether they feel like they have enough content to run their own blog or not. When they read something and when there's a little blurb that says you can comment, you know, then you start to realize that people do think, you know, and they do have thoughts about these, you know, these topics.
Well, what's fascinating about the whole idea is that you're blogging about the music business. It's a very meta process, because you're not blogging about you and your music.
Yeah.
You're blogging about the music business. And if I'm in a band, I might read your blog and pick up some tips. And I mean, somebody who's done that really well over the years is Joy Ike from Pittsburgh. She has a blog called Grassrootsy.
Okay.
And it's been years I've been following that blog. And it's an independent musician's guide to life. And she's been on the road for maybe 3 years.
Okay.
So she has a lot of experience. And she, you know, this is what she does full time and has been doing it full time for those many years, and would pick up things along the way and eventually get guest bloggers and
you know,
to chime in and all this sort of stuff. And I've learned a tremendous amount of stuff from her blog, but it's a similar thing where she's a musician, but she's talking about how to be a musician.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot, particularly with writers, because it's natural, right?
Yeah.
Because they like to write.
Yeah.
But with writers and with some small businesses and some different things like that, software developers. But you don't see it a whole lot with music. Joy's the one person that comes to mind until you came along.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, well, I think that's a one. I've thought a lot about like what this blog will mean, as far as, especially for the online presence, because it's on the website. So when you go to our website to see our music, you know, some people are in the mode of like, you know, you get a listener might come on because they saw a YouTube video or whatever,
right?
And they want to hear our songs, and then you think, what is the effect that they'll kind of not even really get the behind the scenes of the music, but get the business side of the music? I wondered if that would like turn people off a little bit, like, dude, you know,
well, that
know
what is, I mean,
take the magic out of it a little bit.
Yeah, because that is interesting, because in Joy's case, it's a completely separate thing.
Okay.
So she has joyike.com, which is her thing, and then she has Grassrootsy. But yours is like, yeah, it's like right there. It's like, here we are.
Yeah, it's like probably going to be, if not the first way somebody sees, you know, hears about our music or anything, it's definitely going to be the second, you know, the second thing that they go to. But I think the times are just, you know, I think the reason I was just like, you know what, just do this blog thing, you know, just do it. It's because I realized that there are so many artists out there who are in this. There's like a demographic now of like do-it-yourself artists or independent artists, or, you know, whether it's people on their own labels or
sure.
kids in their bedroom, you know, recording the same, you know, like we record in our bedroom. So we started realizing, you know, like you can't please everybody in that, but that's not really your job, you know?
No,
so it's
no.
like, just connect with people like us. So we were like, let's just connect with, and I don't mean to turn off anybody who's like, I don't mean to be like above anybody's head or be like, if you don't get business, our website's not for you. But I'm just saying like a way to connect with artists who relate to that.
Sure. You know? But you're not, I mean, it's not the front page either.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's not like if I was looking to see when you were playing, I couldn't yeah. figure that out. You know,
yeah, it's like you had to fill out a quiz on music business before you got right? to music. You know?
Well, yeah. what do you think has been, well, let me put it to you this way. Have you had any sort of controversial posts that you put out there and people just yeah. railed you on?
Yeah, well, I think that I had one post, and I think it was more unspoken, like not really what people commented, but I could see that a lot of people had read it. I had one called Work for Free, which yeah, was yeah. just recently. Basically, there's definitely a debate where some people, well, just the way music is right now, there's lots of opportunities to play for free for people. And I've heard people say that there's getting less and less opportunities. You know, like people are almost taking that as a scapegoat to not pay artists. And that's actually probably a long standing, you know, discussion. That's probably been going on for yeah. a while, but
yeah.
But, yeah, so I had a post just saying like, it was going off another post I had about calling making art factory work, which is felt like something that's hard as an artist to not make your art your day job. So talking about that, about working for free, I had this post that was basically saying like, just do the biggest art you can do, just do the biggest impact you can do. When you're starting out, you know, like when you're
yeah,
creating
right.
a font, just reach the most people you can reach in the best way, in the most honest way, you know, and then get some movement behind your work. Before you start charging, you know, like your guitar playing might not be worth anything to anybody financially. You know, it's worth, like our art is worth appreciation, you sure. know, or movement in people. And I gave an analogy to if you sing in chorus, or, you know, like back when I was in high school, if you got like a talent show spot or something like that, the payoff is that you get to play for everybody, you know?
Right.
But then, if you're going to start a band and you're going to try to support yourself on that, you need to figure out where do the finances come from? You know,
uh-huh.
like where do you make money? And I was suggesting that it's not from your playing, it's from the movement. Like your playing should make movement, should make supporters. You know, like people should fall in love with what you do. And then if they do love it, then that's where the business would come in. That'd be ways for them to support what you're doing, you know. But that's so I did that post, and I think the controversy is, you know, maybe just frustration. Like I know what it's like when our instruments are expensive, gas is expensive, you know.
Yeah.
And so I knew we were postponing that post for a while, you know, because I was like, there's some people who've been gone for a long time who like they don't want to hear artists saying that. They expect like the man to say that, or like the promoter to say work for free, but they don't want to hear like the artist being okay with that. But it had great discussion, you know, like, and not everybody disagreed with it.
Yeah, well, let me push you on that a little bit, because so the position is that when you're starting out, you should just play as much as you can regardless of the money.
Yeah, well, and I shouldn't even say just when you're starting out. One of the ways, like Seth Godin puts it with his blog, you know, he talks about making free work like a part of your business all the time. There's all like, I'm trying to relate it to the way like a business would, like what a traditional business would do. I mean, there'd be free services or something, you know.
Well, bloggers themselves do it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
These guys that like Seth Godin, he blogs every day, or the Minimalists, or these other guys who have, you know, hundreds of thousands of readers.
Yeah.
They publish articles 3 to 5 times a week for free. Good
mm-hmm.
content, valuable stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that you could actually change your life because you read it and you didn't pay a penny for it.
Yeah.
But following that up is an e-course or an e-book.
Yeah.
Or some, you know, coaching that yeah. they're gonna do, and they're gonna say, hey, I'm offering a coaching service, and it's going to cost, you know, $500 for the next 6 months of coaching.
Yeah.
And, or whatever. And that's where they're making the money. Mm-hmm. So you've got a nugget of information that you get for nothing as a fan. And if you get sort of sucked in and you become a follower and a believer in what they do, when they offer you some product that costs money,
yeah,
you buy it.
Yeah. And sometimes it even goes further than, it's definitely true for if you're trying to build a band and you're trying to grow your band financially. Free work definitely can lead to finances. Some of the examples I think of, John Foreman is the lead singer of Switchfoot. He's a guy who, like, I followed for a long time all the way through high school. And the example I think of is of him is that, like, he didn't, his free work didn't even necessarily turn to finances. It just turns into, like, your connection with him. So, like, what he did was he would play acoustic shows. And I think some people know this. It seems to be, like, picking up on YouTube or whatever. But after almost every show, he goes out on the street somewhere, you know, and plays. And, like, all these people gather around. And I think he even did it in Lancaster, like, 3 years ago or something at, like, a Home Depot.
Is that right?
I think they played, like, the American Music Theater or something. And I found a YouTube video of it. But, yeah, so that's, like, just a, you know.
Yeah, but that's a different thing when you're famous.
Yeah.
And then you
but
do
it's
something.
But it's put him, I think it's put him in, like, a prolific songwriter even more so. Like, when you're listening to the music, you just know him more. You know what I mean?
Sure,
because
sure.
You've seen those. Which, you know, and honestly, that probably leads back to financial, as for, you know, for the band Switchfoot, that probably financially helps them as well.
Well, but, that's marketing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's shift the conversation this way. So let's just say that these blog, what a blog is in the example that I gave, and what your blog is marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get people engaged in who you are mm-hmm. so that they will do something, mm-hmm. so that they will become a fan, they will become a follower. So that's, you know, and marketing has always existed. So rather than printing a poster nowadays,
yeah,
we blog. Or rather than mailing out postcards to a mailing list, we send email blasts and we blog.
Yeah.
Or we do podcasts, or we do these other things that people get for free. But the purpose of that ultimately is marketing you as a product.
Yeah.
So when you are new or you're in this game, I guess the question from your post, because I did read that post,
mm-hmm.
and the question from your post really becomes, what's the translation? What's the product you're selling on the other side of the free music? Because mm-hmm. the blog is free, and that's marketing. And you might be able to record songs and give them away for free.
Mm-hmm.
People have been doing that now, right, for the last 15 years because of how freely music changes hands. But it's always in the effort to get people out to your show.
Mm-hmm.
But with your post, it almost seems like if you take away the revenue from the show, what's left?
Yeah, I think some people, like I said, like it's hard for me to completely communicate my idea in like three paragraphs. I know one specific response was kind of like, you like art is worth, in the post I said art doesn't have like a monetary value to it. And the response was like, yeah, like it does, you know, even since the beginning of the time, people have bought art. It's worth money to people, you know. And I think what I was trying to say is that, and talking about that factory job post, I said, like, we start to get to the point where, as bands, where we're like, all right, we've got to stop, like, just driving around, like, playing anywhere. Like, we're not going to play until we can get paid, like, this much. Like, this is our limit, you know. And, you know, that definitely has its place, but I think it starts to change your mind into, like, what you're doing as far as, like, creating movement around your art, like, reaching the most people possible. After a while, it's just like a factory job where you're like, we are driving to Harrisburg because we finally got a gig that will pay our limit, you know? And not to say that your heart's not in it, but you're not like saying, how can we get people behind our art? Or how can we reach people that want to hear what we do? Like, how can we reach those people? How can we get those people talking? When you start to say, like, we're not willing to do this, you know, you're starting to get to the point where, like, people are taking advantage of us and we're not willing to do it for free. It's actually, you know, I've known two bands locally that did that were I was friends with, and it, like, it was pretty much showed, like, the end of the band.
Is that
as
right?
As soon as they came up with that idea, because it's, like, the movement kind of stops. It just becomes factory work. You know?
It's such a challenge because if you really just want to do it for the art, then you just play. Mm-hmm. You don't even try to sell it.
Yeah.
If it's really just about the art, why even leave the bedroom? Well, there's a component of an audience,
mm-hmm.
that's maybe part of the art,
mm-hmm.
part of the magic. But you can play any number of places for an audience for nothing,
mm-hmm.
and where there's no expectation. In other words, you play for your family.
Yeah.
You know, you can play at church.
Yeah.
You can play at any number of places and volunteer, and people mm-hmm. would love it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Go to a nursing home and yeah. play. I've done that a number of times. It's wonderful. They're yeah. wonderful audiences. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of money. Some nursing homes, some do, but... So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it's just for the art, then it is just... There's plenty of ways to go about that. But as soon as I think you translate that into, or you convert that, or you move that
yeah.
thing that you're doing into something where you're looking for to build a following.
Yeah.
There's a shift there.
Yeah.
Like something changes.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, and you want to shift into that new mode and like completely understand what you're doing in the music business. But you don't want to lose complete touch with understanding that, like, at the end of the day, it's art. So you're not selling like a commodity or whatever.
Right.
You're selling the art. Yeah. So you like, it's a mixture of both. It's definitely more the business side, but then you don't want to make it into a day job or something like that, where you forget, like, people need to be moved by the art. Just be ready to be like connecting with people through your art, you know? And I honestly feel like as bands, like when we're looking at marketing, we're looking at like, how can we tell people about music, you know? And I'm especially from listening to Seth Godin, I'm trying to get to points like, how can I tell a few people about music and they be so inspired to tell more people than I, like more marketing than I can even control.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like the marketing's happening and I'm like, all right, I got to get my stuff together now and go with this ride, you know? I think that's what we all like dream about happening, you know? So trying to do that in...
Maybe so, but I don't think most bands think in those terms. Godin, there was an interview, you probably saw it if you follow him, and I'm not a big follower of his, but I saw this video interview where he talked about the simple fact that if you didn't blow people away at the performance that you just put on,
mm-hmm.
that you need to change something,
mm-hmm.
because it didn't work. It's not
yeah.
their fault.
Yeah.
I think the context of that comment was that that anybody has enough family, friends, acquaintances, whatever, to have a successful first show.
Yeah.
So if you and I formed a band this yeah. week, like if we said we're going to form a band, we came up with a name, we got together for a couple of weekends and we put together some music.
Yeah.
We have enough people in our network, we can have a killer first show.
Yeah. And from that point, we would just create new bands every week. And we would just go on tour like that.
That's right. Maybe that's the answer.
Yeah.
So his point was, is that your second show is really the most important show.
Yeah.
Because if your family and friends walk away from that show and just say, well, that was nice,
mm-hmm.
and never mention it to anybody else, because they don't really have a responsibility to mention it to anybody else, then you've failed.
And that's like, I think that's one of those concepts that's hard to, we're all musicians, and it's now in this day and age, it's our job to become like business people. Pretty mm-hmm. much, you know, the tools are all there. It's becoming our responsibility to be our own marketers and things like that. But then, like, to try to wrap your mind around, like, all business, you know, a lot of the business concepts fit music, but then also because you're selling art, there's just some things that are a little different, you know. Taking my time, like, you know that it's killing me. I never was all the things that I want to be. Waiting for the day when I don't have to make believe. Go.
I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Each week, we bring you interviews with performing artists and those who make the performing arts happen in and around Lancaster, Pennsylvania. If you like the show, please let us know. Drop me a line at jason@woodstovehouse.com with any comments, questions, or suggestions. And if you really like the show, consider joining other supporters of the program and drop a few bucks in the tip jar to help us do what we do. The tip jar is located in the top right corner of our website, woodstovehouse.com. And now back to my conversation with Jesse Baker on Around the Wood Stove. Well, what do you think about the idea of valuing yourself first, where other people won't value you unless you value yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does that play into it? So, for example, if I said, mm-hmm. well, if I said, you know what, I've got this band and I know that we're really good and I believe in this band, we're going to start at $500 a show. And I'm going to contact some places that I know pay that.
Mm-hmm.
And if people approach me that don't, and hopefully we can get in and we'll keep working at it till we do. But if somebody approaches me at a room and says, well, it's an exposure gig or it's
mm-hmm.
$150 or something, we're just not going to take it because we know we're worth more than that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what you're talking about when you limit yourself. But on the other hand, that if you never say how valuable you are,
mm-hmm.
there's really no value associated with it.
Yeah, and I think there's so many aspects of every business plan that might not be a bad route to go, but there'd have to be more going on around that plan. The same way, if you're going to play for free, one of the examples from Seth Godin's life. I don't know if you watched this the documentary Press Pause Play. I always get mixed up because it's three P words, but Press Pause Play is a documentary about independent music. And I'm watching it, and all of a sudden, like, Seth Godin pops up, and it's like, whoa, you're my favorite person. You don't know.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, it was just surprising he was in it. But anyway, so he was talking about a time when he had written a book about free ideas spread quickly.
Uh-huh.
And he goes to release the book, but he's like, well, I don't even think he wanted to release a book. He had just had, like, a bestseller or something like that. And he explains this in the documentary, but he said, so he has this book about how free ideas spread quickly. So he goes to his publisher and he says, I got to do what I just said. I got to put this out for free and see how quickly it spreads. And in the documentary, he's like, I wasn't really doing it for money. I was doing it to make a point, you know.
Right.
Well, the publisher says, we can't make it for free and we can put it out next year. So what he did was he just put it online for free as like an ebook, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And he said it took a little while. Like, he didn't have any marketing behind it or anything. So it took a little while to grow. But all of a sudden, it like really grew. And I don't even really know the name of this book or anything. But you should definitely check out the documentary. But anyway, the book gets so many downloads, then people start emailing him and saying, like, I need to have this book, but I'm tired of flipping through the, you know, the screens. I want a real copy of it. So it's a paperback book, like, I think he said, like, 200 pages or something. He puts it on Amazon.com for, like, $40. Like, just an unreal price. Just as, like, an experiment, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
this sells free, a bunch of them, right?
Yeah, like, he gave his thoughts out for free, and he just wants to see, like, you know, what type of impact did that have on people? And people said it became like a bestseller. I forget. He said like until it was like, you know, normally bestsellers are in the first week of sales. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
But so he's like a year later or whatever, like comes up to like surpass books that were just coming out. And just from the movement behind it. But he started that whole process just putting the book out there for free. And he says he never intended on selling it until later, you know. So if that's true, it's just a crazy story. But I think being willing to like, you know, being a business person with your music, but also being an artist as well, and being okay to take the opportunities just to display your art where it's going to have a huge impact on people.
I think it's a fascinating idea.
Yeah.
And I know, like I said, I know these other bloggers and these different people who've been doing this free stuff,
mm-hmm.
and that's how you sort of get sucked into their world, and you mm-hmm. just fall sort of in love with what they're saying, the way they write and the way they think, and then all of a sudden they release an ebook or they release something and you go buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do the numbers, you can quickly figure out that if I have 200,000 blog readers and I put out a book and even X number of them buy it for $10 or $15, like
mm-hmm.
it's a pretty good chunk of change to sustain me for the next several
yeah.
months, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like you're eating ramen noodles forever.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the same respect, with the music thing, I think that the code that I feel like needs to be cracked is, what's the $40 paperback?
Yeah.
You see what I mean? At the end of that story.
Yeah.
If you're a musician and you put out this record and or you record this music and it's great and everybody starts to love it.
Yeah.
And you're going around and you're playing on the street or you're playing these different places and you're doing it for free and everybody's loving it. Like in Seth Godin's case, you know, he can speak anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And make a lot of money. He can. Yeah. So he has something that's valuable on the other side of that. What I think is it would be an interesting answer is, from your perspective, what's the musical thing then you can do to actually sustain yourself?
Yeah. So I think for me right now, my thought is that touring, you know, I'm playing. I guess the reason that I'm maybe so unsure about saying this is because I'm so early in the process that I'm kind of at the point where I'm looking at it like, I just need to move people. Like, you know, so maybe I can't speak for bands that are like experienced or years down the road, like what exactly they should give away for free, what they shouldn't. But all I know is like, if you're like me and you have work that you want people to hear, you know?
Yeah.
And you might not even have, you might have to just do your work for free and just get it out there because maybe you can't even fathom like how exactly you'll make money off of it.
I got it.
But you know that if you charge for it right off the bat, no one will hear it. So, you know, maybe that I'm early in the process and I'm just like, people have to hear these songs. You know what I mean? Like, and then when that's happening, you know, then we'll like reevaluate, is live touring where the finances will come in to support us, or will, I don't know, will we sell the blog as an ebook or something? You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
But just being an artist and just, you know, putting our art out there for the appreciation payback, you know.
How do you think that you've gone from, Battle of the Bands, like you mentioned, last year, to getting some of these really high profile regional gigs? I mean, you just did a show with Ducky right up in Harrisburg.
I
saw a bunch of people tweeting about it. You're playing the Chameleon with King's Foil. You played the main stage at Launch. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think has been the key without a big infrastructure in 10 years or even 5 years of like beating it up around here?
I would say that would kind of just what we were talking about. As far as how I made connections or how I was just in the scene, you know, this whole year has just been a lot of giving stuff away, whether it's retweets, you know, of stuff that I'm not at all benefiting from. I feel, you know, our responsibility when I see somebody like King's Four or whatever is releasing something, you know. We've definitely, as a band, like made that. We've definitely talked about that a lot, about just showing up to people's shows. Like, if we believe in supporting music that reaches us, you know, then we just got to be doing that.
Yeah.
And we definitely have not had really plans. Like, I didn't know that like our connections would grow and we would play the gigs we played or anything like that. But we just knew that like we were going to meet people through just connecting with people and just, you know, basically giving, but also just being around. That was another thing that came from Seth Godin's blogging through him talking about how to use social media. We learned that pretty quick, that it was more about how much we're connecting, you know. It's a chance for us to like to show our support for other people, you know.
Yeah.
That doesn't always turn into gigs. Like, that doesn't mean that people say like, No, you can play here, you know.
It's not immediate.
Yeah. But it gets you connected. You just connect, and you always want to be honest about it. You want to connect with the things that you love, you know.
Yeah.
But, I've been to a lot of shows this year, and I've just always been researching, like, what's going on in Lancaster, you know, and just trying to support whatever I see as, like, something quality that deserves support, you know. Instead of waiting for opportunities to meet people when you feel like, I need to meet this person because they have this thing that I need, you know, when you just start saying like, I'm just going to start meeting. When I see quality art, I'm going to figure out who's behind it. And that's who I'm going to associate with. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of energy right now behind the idea that if you want to do something, find people who are already doing it and associate with them, mm-hmm. or build a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And not everybody's going to respond reciprocally, right? So mm-hmm. just because so-and-so is in this band and you approach them or try to meet them or whatever, that they're going to be like, oh, hey, let's be buddies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you constantly surround yourself with people who are passionately living the things you want to be passionately living about, right? Like, eventually you're gonna strike these relationships with these people, mm-hmm. and it's going to pull you to another place. Mm-hmm. No different than sports.
Yeah.
If I want to be a better tennis player, I need to go play with better tennis players, and mm-hmm. I'll get better. And there's a lot of that happening. And I feel like mm-hmm. when you just said that, or you know, when you just said about the scene, mm-hmm. that's right in line with that. And that's a great place to go. That's wisdom. You know what I mean, to have.
Yeah, and I want, like, one of the upcoming things we're doing is in the community room above Prince Street. It's Monday, October 8th. We have Mark Rose and John Walker, who are Chicago-based singer-songwriters. And then opening up for them is all local artists who agreed to just come out and support it, you know? So, like, Derry Miller and Mike McMonagle and a bunch of other guys just come out, like, playing a song or two and just hanging out, you know? But that's one of those moments where, like, everybody's kind of thrown into the show. It's in the community room, if you've been there, you know, real small and that. So it's not like we're like selling out the Chameleon and
right.
we're all splitting money at the end of it. But everybody's just kind of for, you know, basically for free, just throwing into the music scene. There's a lot of community in the artists that they believe in each other's work and things like that. And so everybody's just getting movement going, really with no clear idea of exactly where it's going to benefit them. But they just know that that movement, people sharing each other's music and just a great night of music in Lancaster, is basically going to benefit everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I was really amazed that so many artists were like, yeah, we'll come by. You know, some people are from York, some people are from Harrisburg, and they're like, yeah, I'll spend my Monday night, like, I'll drive all the way over there and play a song or two, you know? So that was exciting.
Why do you make music?
Wow. And I guess we're going to get to the hard questions now. Maybe that shouldn't be that hard. It just, like, hit me, like, I think I love writing songs. I don't know if my, like, songwriting brain is the same brain as my business-minded brain, but it probably is. They're very, like, similar, you know, things. But, yeah, I just love writing music. I basically, you know, just live in music all the time, always listening to music and that. And I just love creating, you know, so... back in high school, like, music was just something that I latched onto, and I don't know when I even decided that was going to be, like, what I did, you know. It seems like that was a long time ago I decided that, you know, but pretty much all of my friendships, everything like that, happens through music, you know, and it's just a blast. It's addicting, you know.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to come down and talk about the way you're going about the music business. It's like the Jesse Baker approach. You know what I mean? It's cool. And I wish you all the best with the rest of the record recording process, and look forward to this full-length album when it comes out.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You can find out more about Jesse Baker and read his daily blog at jessebaker.net, or you can link up from the show post on our website, woodstovehouse.com. And while you're there, you can check out past episodes of the program, subscribe to the show, or leave a few bucks in the tip jar to help us do what we do. If you like what you hear, please drop a comment on the show post, give us a good rating on iTunes, and be sure to tell your friends about the show.
Around the Wood Stove was produced at the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Find us online at woodstovehouse.com.